The Bush administration may soon attempt to take grizzly bears and western gray wolves off the endangered list. A tentative plan to delist the eastern gray wolf was unveiled last summer. Grizzlies and gray wolves are rebounding, but only in parts of their former range. Scientists are fighting over whether this means these species have been saved. NPR's John Nielsen has more in a story that is part of a series of reports on the Endangered Species Act of 1973.
Very noisy eastern gray wolves live in the mesh enclosures at the Wildlife Science Center in Lake Forest, Minnesota. They're hungry, they're jumpy, they hear a car, they want you to step away from the cage. Sometimes they go on like that all day. But when Interior Secretary Gail Norton stopped by the center this summer to make a big announcement, those howling wolves went mum.
We have reached the point we can propose removing gray wolves from the endangered species list in the eastern United States.
30 years ago, gray wolves were all but extinct in the lower 48 states. Now, thanks in part to the power of the Endangered Species Act, they've rebounded dramatically in parts of the upper Midwest. Dave Meigs, a biologist with the U.S. Geological Survey, says these wolves have far surpassed recovery goals calling for at least 100 of the animals in Michigan and Wisconsin.
And about 1,250 in Minnesota, all at the same time. Well, that was reached 6 or 7 years ago, those numbers were reached, and the population has continued to build.
So-called headcount definitions of the word recovery have been in use for roughly 30 years now, and many ecologists take that as an insult. Joel Berger, predator expert with the Wildlife Conservation Society, says ecologists have learned amazing things about the way ecosystems work since the middle of the 1970s, but in his opinion, hardly any of this knowledge has been used to set recovery goals.
Some people will claim, oh, those scientists that care about conservation are always trying to expand the box. Well, now that we have better science, why is it that we fail to adopt and change measures that deal with ecosystems when we do this with human safety, we deal this with medicine, we do this with pharmaceuticals?
Berger says headcounts ignore the ways important species can change entire landscapes. For instance, when western forests lose their wolves and grizzlies, he says, herds of elk and moose get bigger and hungrier, with predictable results.
The vegetation communities are mowed down. What that means is neotropical migrant birds, you have a bunch of flycatchers, you have warblers. They don't land in those areas anymore because the vegetation is mowed down.
Ecological changes of this sort are being studied all over the country these days. In the mountains near Front Royal, Virginia, biologist Chad Stewart drives a rattle trap research truck down a rut field road toward an experimental forest. Once this was a training center for Confederate cavalrymen. Now it's part of the Smithsonian Institution's Conservation and Research Center. When we reach the forest known as Posey Hollow, Stewart grabs a radio tracking device and heads up the hill into the woods. He can't see the radio-collared deer that's sending back those beeping noises, but he knows she's close. He knows she's got a lot of friends. Predators and hunters have been missing from these forests for generations, Stewart says.
We're living in a time where the highest deer densities have been recorded pretty much throughout history. The forests aren't really used to, you know, having these numbers.
In other words, in the absence of predators, the deer herds have come to dominate Posey Hollow, eating everything they can get their teeth on.
See how there's very little leaves on any of the trees that are below about 4 or 5 feet off the ground. There's really no leaves on any of the trees.
Stewart clacks a stick along the side of a 10-foot wire fence that winds up and over the hill. It was built 10 years ago to keep deer out of a 10-acre stretch of this forest. The results are dramatic. Inside the fence, hardwood sapling trees are all over the place, including lots of beech, lots of oak, and maple. These are the kinds of trees that eventually punch their way up through the forest canopy, drawing in migrating birds. The land on the deer side of the fence, by comparison, looks mangy. The saplings and many of the bushes have been eaten and replaced by exotic grasses, Stewart says, and this is only the beginning.
It reduces the cover for ground nesting and low canopy nesting birds. Small mammals as well can be affected. Just by reducing cover, it makes them more visible to foxes, coyotes, anything that would prey on a small mammal, essentially.
If recoveries were measured ecologically, ecologists like Joel Berger say the reappearance of saplings in an open forest could be taken as proof that predators like wolves were not merely surviving, but refilling the traditional ecological niche they once filled across a large part of their former range. This kind of recovery goes far beyond what Secretary Norton had in mind. But wolf biologist Dave Meigs of the U.S. Geological Survey says there's reason to be wary of this new approach. First of all, he wants to know exactly what a traditional ecological niche is.
How do you know when you're there? In other words, do there have to be 100 wolves or 1,000 wolves or 10,000 or what? And boy, that could be argued forever.
Meigs is also skeptical of claims that great stretches of habitat will be transformed when so-called keystone predators are returned to them. Parks and research forests are one thing, he says. Farms and suburbs are another.
So there's a few more aspen or willows there than there would have been without wolves. So what, you know?
But ecologist Joel Berger says there is one part of the country where recovery programs built around ecological goals could be tested on a grand scale. That would be the 26-million-acre Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, which surrounds the 2-million-acre Yellowstone National Park, which happens to be the home of almost all of the nation's western gray wolves and grizzlies. Activists who'd like to see this test take place have been buying and retiring grazing rights in the area for years, says Berger.
There are models to be used that can make it work in this one place with these two highly charismatic and generally well-liked species by the public.
Berger thinks more people need to know what the alternative to this plan is. Animals like western wolves and grizzlies will not go extinct, in his opinion, but they won't spread out much either. Instead, they'll end up isolated inside national parks that are looking more and more to him like a bunch of giant outdoor zoos. John Nielsen, NPR News, Washington.